This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome on to another edition of the Kona Edge. I am Brad Brown. It is awesome to have you with us. I mentioned yesterday about my early morning bike rides. I tell you what, I am so stoked with myself. I'm telling anyone who listens, I'm telling you as well. And it's a way for me to be accountable to you as well. I've mentioned that I've got some big goals athletically this year. I'm not planning on winning any races, but it's time to really get back into the swing of things with an Ironman in April. And I got a very, very cool run in today as well. You know what it's like. Where you're just training and it just feels so hard. And I have had that for the last 2-3 months, particularly with running. It's just been an absolute slog. And for the first time in so long today, I feel like, I don't want to say it was easy, but it was comfortable. It wasn't fast by any stretch of the imagination, but it did not feel like hard work, which I am so stoked about. You have no idea. So we are 10 days into the new year, and I'm 10 for 10. So I haven't missed a day's training yet, which is amazing. And I'm feeling good. The legs are feeling strong. The body's starting to firm up a little bit. I'm feeling really good about things, which is absolutely fantastic. Coming up on today's podcast, we're going to be sharing another phenomenal story with you. Touch base with Julie Dunkel to find out a little bit about how she got into the sport and her background. And that's all coming up on today's podcast. But I'm also super excited to be able to share this with you here at the Kona Edge. We are part of a global launch with S Fuels as they launch a brand new product. You may remember last year, right? The Kona Edge drove hundreds of Ironman athletes in the US to sample the S Fuels bars for low carb, high fat fueling. Well, the good news is our friends over at S Fuels are raising the bar once again. And finally, ultra endurance athletes have a choice to hydrate and fuel muscles without sugary drinks and gels, without sugar swings, without sugar gut issues, and without sugar inflammation. S-Fuel's Ultra Endurance Drink Mix in coconut lime, strawberry lemonade, and pomegranate acai flavors hydrates, fuels, and supports the gut and muscles in ultra endurance training and racing. To make this super easy to try, okay, the Kona Edge and S-Fuels have come together to offer you a free shipping and a money-back guarantee to prove that you can ditch those sugar fuels this Ironman season. Simply head over to this URL, okay? It is thekonaedge.com/S-Fuels. That's S-F-U-E-L-S. Or simply text the word S-Fuels. That's S-F-U-E-L-S to 44222. You can also click on the link in your favorite podcast player, whatever you listen to this podcast through, or you can click on the link in the show notes to this episode of the Kona Edge if you'd like to find out more. And be sure to try out the S Fuels Ultra Endurance Mix today. That URL to get to once again is thekonaedge.com/S-Fuels. You've got absolutely nothing to lose. If you're struggling with your hydration, definitely check these things out. They are fantastic. Today's Coach's Corner brought to you by Superfly Coaching. They've helped dozens of athletes reach Ironman Kona, the 70.3 World Championships, and even the Olympic Games. Their coaches, along with Joe Friel, have written several books on training methodologies. Their experienced coaches are uniquely qualified to recognize your skills while addressing your weaknesses. Their coaches have already helped athletes just like you reach their goals, so let them help you. Whether you're attempting to release pounds or shave off a few seconds, they're with you every step of the way. Are you interested in upping your game from acceptable to exceptional? By partnering with your passion and their experienced coaches, you can reach your full potential. Their coaching plans are like their clients, no two are alike. Once you've chosen your service level that works best for you, your coach will begin to develop your customized plan. Don't let stomach issues ruin your race. From coaching to nutritional advice, they cover it all. To discover more about Superfly Coaching, head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching. And don't forget, if you're a coach or have a coaching business and would like to get a plug on the podcast, head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching. Well, we head to California now here on the Kona Edge, and a great pleasure to welcome Julie Dunkel onto the podcast. Julie, welcome onto the Kona Edge.
Thank you very much. Thrilled to be here.
Julia, nice to catch up. Kona as a race has been a pretty big part of your life for quite a while. You're no stranger to the Big Island.
No, I have towed the line at that magical place 6 times. So it's the most I've raced any other Ironman. So I know it well.
What is it that makes it so special? What keeps you coming back?
Well, you know, one, it's the World Championships, which is, you know, the biggest event in our sport. But I think it's a tough nut to crack. And I haven't raced well there yet. And I'm in pursuit to have a good day on that island. And it takes people a lot of time. You look at a lot of pros who take a lot of years. And so I'm not ready to give up.
How close are you to that perfect race?
I would say, you know, for me, the perfect race is to get on the podium, to get one of the elusive bowls. And so I've been as close as 6 minutes. So that's close, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they talk in sort of flying terms like a near miss, and 6 minutes in an Ironman is definitely a near miss.
Absolutely. And it's at the end of that race there, I didn't have any time those extra 6 minutes to make up. So it's a journey and a process.
Yeah, absolutely. Julie, let's take a step back and sort of your beginnings. Where did your love and sort of involvement in triathlon start?
So I came to triathlon probably like a lot of other people as an injured athlete from another discipline. I came from a swimming background, so I was a collegiate swimmer, swam until I was 22, and then promptly did not step back in a pool for almost 10 years and got really involved in running and took on running the way I did swimming. And it's not an uncommon pattern to find just injury after injury after injury. So when I was just about 40, I was on my, 12th injury, and my doctor suggested I start riding a bike. And I rode a bike for 6 months and was back running. And a very good friend of mine asked, you know, if I knew how to swim, and I dropped into a triathlon, and it was a life-changing event.
How long ago was that?
It was 11 years ago.
Have there been times in those 11 years where you've questioned your sanity? Is that something that happens, or has it been a love affair that continues right throughout those 11 years?
Oh, I mean, my husband questions my sanity, but no, it's an addiction, and I think it's I have a lot of friends who've retired and given up the sport, and I just am not there yet. I still just have this passion and desire, and it is. It's takes over your life, but I love it.
Julie, what do you think the secret is to keeping that passion? Like you say, you've got a lot of friends who have been in the sport and retired. It's easy to sort of get into it all gung-ho and have two or three really good seasons and then just feel totally burnt out. How have you managed to stay fresh and keep that passion over the years?
You know, I think it's staying engaged with, I think having a good coach and someone else involved in your program. And it's finding a balance and really setting realistic expectations and goals. And having patience, a lot of patience, with not only the aging process, the racing, the injury cycles. And, I think you have to really be willing to forgive yourself, and reassess and try new things. And I don't really know. I think I don't ever forget those finish lines. And that's what keeps me, you know, going back to the training on a day-to-day basis.
You said you fell into triathlon after being asked if you can swim. Can you remember your first Ironman? Tell me a little bit about that experience.
Oh, I remember everything about it. It was Ironman Coeur d'Alene, and, it was still, you know, towing the line at that race. I was not sure, you know, getting your head around that distance is just amazing. And I remember Mike Riley saying, you know, there's one thing you can control, and that's your attitude. And I thought, you know, he's right. And for me, the swim was the best part of the race. And it was great. And the bike was just, I loved every single minute of it. And I kept thinking, God, this really isn't that hard. And then the run got really real around mile 12 and 13. And I just, at that point, I realized I was going to do it. And it was a battle like I'd never done before. And that last mile of that race is still, I mean, I get, you know, tears in my eyes right now. It's amazing. I was so in love with the sport, with the people, with the energy, with how fast other people went. I mean, I crossed the finish line and within 10 minutes, I signed up for my next Ironman. I was like, I got to do this again.
Judy, I love the fact that you get, I mean, that was a while ago, and I love the fact that you still get emotional about that first one. Are you the same every finish line, or is it that the first one's that little bit more special than the rest?
You know, I think the first one is a little more special, but any race that I get to the finish line that is a good race or is in Hawaii, I'm so emotional. It just, I think it still blows my mind that, you know, our bodies are really capable of, you know, being able to do that. And just everything comes together, that last mile of the culmination, the training and the support and the people and your family. And I guess I just feel so blessed that it's hard not to just, you know, to just kind of fall apart emotionally.
Is it those moments that keep you going through the tough times in training? Because it's not all rainbows and sunshine when training for an Ironman. Anyone who's done a few of them will tell you that. Do you sort of go back to those moments in your training when times are tough and vice versa during a race when times are tough? Is it the finish line that keeps dragging you, or do you revert back to the tough times you've had in training and got through?
So when it gets tough in the training, I do. I have, you know, I write a lot about my racing and training. And so, and you know, I have a lot of pictures, and so those memories are always very fresh. And so, when it gets tough training, I thrive off of that, but I also thrive off of my competition. You know, I wonder what they're doing. And now with the likes of Strava and all these sorts of things, I know some of my competitors have just knocked out a workout that I'm struggling with. And, you know, that is sometimes what it takes to get that workout done. And racing, yeah, sometimes, you know, you go back to think, you know, God, I did this in training so many times. But I think for racing, when it really gets tough, I think about like the people and the support and the letdown. You know, not only my family, my friends, but the athletes I coach, and I feel like I owe it to them to absolutely bury myself versus just calling it, you know, phoning in the finish line.
You've obviously got a competitive nature. Did that come before the collegiate swimming, or was that something that developed at college with that swimming? Tell me a little bit about your competitiveness, and is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Do you wish you were more competitive? Do you wish you were less competitive?
I don't know if I could be more competitive, but, you know, I don't know when it came, because I started swimming when I was 4. So I feel like I've spent my whole life wanting to win. And I think when you grow up in an environment like that through racing as a child and in high school and through college, that's the only way I know how to think, is you set a goal, you put a plan, and you try to achieve that. And just because of the nature of life in general or sport, that's competing against other people. So certainly with age, I've had to try to temper that, because everything is not a race and you do not need to win everything. And so I've had to really work on that, you know, through my 20s and 30s, to not really have to win at everything and win at the things that really are the most important.
You made a pretty interesting point there with regards to winning's not everything. And you also touched on the Strava and the platforms like that. I mean, I think one of the big ones at the moment is Zwift and seeing what other people are doing. How easy is it to get caught up in that, where obviously you've got a coach and you know what you need to do, but seeing what other people are doing do you find it difficult to hold yourself back? Do you feel like you can get carried away tracking what others are doing on platforms like that?
Absolutely, but I've learned over the years to just use that as sort of fuel and not let it hijack my training. Early on, when I was training to qualify for my first race, I would go on a Tuesday ride and consistently just hammer the ride and thrash myself and not do what my coach said. And, you know, at the end of that, one of the workouts, he called me up and I was proud of all the power I hit and how great it was. And he said, do you want to win the Tuesday workout or do you want to go to Kona? And I've never forgotten that. And so I can now very comfortably ride where I need to ride, knowing that I've got a plan. And that's why I have a coach, because somebody else is looking it out. And so I don't get caught on it. I don't do Zwift on recovery rides because I can't control myself.
Let's talk about the coach. When you got into the sport, did you get help straight away, or is this come after a while since you got involved in the sport?
No, I got a coach almost immediately. I think a lot of that comes from my, you know, I grew up always being coached, and so I just knew the value of having a coach. So I sought out a coach almost immediately. Went through one coach until I kind of settled into another coach that was pretty much Ironman specific. And I really only had three coaches, you know, over my last 11 years. So it's an integral part, I think, in success in this sport.
Julie, what do you look for in a coach?
So I look for it. To me, it's not just about the plan. It's not just about, you know, doing the workouts. Ironman is, it takes over your life. So I need someone who's a coach, who's a mentor, who's a psychologist, who's a marriage counselor. I have high emotional needs on the coaching side. So, that's what I look for in a coach. And I look for someone who's got the experience with, you know, the level of athlete who is trying to, you know, to get to the podium in Hawaii, and has that experience with a number of athletes. I found things like they need to know what it's like to work with women who are in their 40s and 50s. We're a challenge. I know that. So it's finding that sort of that right match. And, you know, it's a relationship. And for me, it's a long-term relationship. So I kind of vet that pretty seriously.
What does it take to qualify to race in Kona? We've got a lot of people who listen to the podcast who are working towards that and are doing the work that they think they need to be doing. In your mind, what does it take to get that slot?
You know, it takes, I get asked this a lot as a coach, and, you know, it's a combination. Part of it, really, you do have to have some sort of God-given talent. You have to come to the table with a certain amount of talent. And then, you know, the next two steps are really determination and time. And it's finding that, putting that formula together that works with your life. And a lot of it is timing. You know, if you've got a full-time job and little kids and another spouse that works, unless you are, you know, 80% talent, it's really tough. And it's sacrifice. It's putting that desire to qualify above almost everything else. It's, when I'm in season, you know, my social life is swimming, biking, and running. I don't do happy hours. I don't, you know, I go to bed at 8. I'm militant about what I eat. And so it's really wanting it so badly that you're willing to kind of give up a lot of things in life that are enjoyable.
Do you think it takes the same to podium in Kona, or is there a different formula to getting on the podium?
Well, I wish I knew that formula. No, it's the last percent is, and so it comes down to if you get to the qualification and you know, if you're a multiple qualifier, then, you know, it's not that you got lucky one year. So you're constantly in that mix. And then it's getting into the fine tuning. And that's where I'm exploring things like, you know, diet changes, adding, turning something upside down, like the strength training program, something, there's got to be something that gets you that last, call it 10%. And when you take all the triathletes that are trying to qualify for Ironman and you get the ones that go to Kona, now you've got this percentage. Now, how do you get to the top of that percent? And I don't know what the formula is, but yeah, it's an additional level of sacrifice. And I think when you qualify for the first time, you go and think, wow, this is just, I'm in Kona. This is great. And then you suddenly realize that you're with the other 55 other people who have come first or second in the race around the world. And it's a whole different show.
As far as changing things up, you mentioned that you've got to be willing to experiment and try different things. Is that a big part, and has it always been a part of who you are? And people are often resistant to change, but how much do you change things, whether it be sort of training techniques on the bike, or as you say, nutrition and the sort of style, the way you eat? Is it something you always tweaking, or do you try and find what works and stick to it?
So I feel like early on, I had a formula that was working. And the problem with our sport is anything you read or you go to a trade show, try this, it'll increase your VO2 max. If you use this product, you won't bonk on the run. So I got sucked into, I think after like 2 years of really good trajectory of training and nutrition that was working, into really turning things upside down. And I had some real failures, nutrition. And so I think I got a little too sucked into why trying something new versus let's just make small improvements on what is working. But now I'm aging, things are changing, and I feel like, I kind of hit this plateau. So I am very resistant to it now because I'm afraid of it. And that's why I kind of have someone else driving that bus of you've got to trust me and trust this process. Mm. And that comes a little bit from the difference in training. The nutrition part I drive just out of kind of curiosity to see how it might change things.
You've mentioned the aging, and I think for a lot of age groupers, as you say, 40s, 50s and beyond, when you start getting to that point where you realize the gains are becoming less and less, and you're slowing down, how have you dealt with that? What's your sort of strategy to counteract that and deal with that?
Oh, it makes me crazy, but so the first thing is I have to realize that everybody is slowing down. Although sometimes I look at the women's 50 to 54 age group and it's faster than the 45 to 49 year olds, but the sport is aging. So people, but I realize I don't need to be going at the pace. I still want to go faster than I did when I was 40, and it's probably not going to happen. I get that. And I don't need to achieve the goals that I want to achieve. So that still weighs heavily with me, the idea of performing at a high level and being slower, but I get it. It happens with age. But I think, one of the biggest things there is I really had to incorporate and work into strength training in a pretty heavy way to counteract, your body falling apart, basically, what it feels like.
Mm. You after Kona last year, you mentioned that in the blog post you wrote, the role of strength and conditioning, and I think you said between 10 and 12 minutes a day is all it took. Tell me a little bit about that regime and what it is that you do and how you feel it benefits you.
So, well, the 10 to 12 minutes was really like a 6 weeks program that was all core and lower back work. And that was because generally at mile 80 on the bike at a race in Kona, when you're in your aero bars for 112 miles, your body just breaks down. And historically, I just coming back on the Queen K when you should be in your aero bars in a headwind, you see a good portion of people sitting up in pain stretching. So that was that sort of test and commitment, which was a huge payoff because I felt great at mile 105 on the bike in my aero bars. So I kind of feel like I cracked that piece of what to do. But the rest of my strength training is a little more strategic. It's twice a week with just pretty basic stuff, you know, squats, deadlifts, single legged work, a lot of lunges, upper body, you know, just the kind of the basic working the big muscle groups to try to keep those muscles, you know, stabilized. And the training goes up and down. It's hard to do heavy lifting when you're, you know, in the peak training, but I think it's keeping that consistency, is really does make a difference.
Has that strength, you talk about the sort of lifting and that, has that been a part of your training regime from day one, or is that something you've introduced, over time?
Oh, no, I probably just started that 2 years ago.
Okay. And the difference, are you seeing a marked difference in what it's doing for your performance?
I think the difference is my recovery and training seems to be better. My recovery after races is better, and I think it's just because of the extra strength. I would say, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, I haven't been broken down, you know, from an injury standpoint. You know, I'm able to maintain a high level of training as I'm aging. So for me, I think that's a win, and I think it's kept me in the competitive, you know, arena.
Let's talk about the balance of being able to race Ironman triathlons competitively and still keep everything going that you need to go. You've got a coaching business, you're married, you've got family, a social life. How do you juggle everything you need to juggle and keep that balance in check?
So, I mean, I think it's, I'm fortunate that, I have a coaching business and then I have another, you know, business that I run, but they're both based out of my house. So I have a lot of flexibility. But I schedule, you know, I schedule my training around my other jobs. I also schedule time in, you know, with my husband. My kids are both in college. So it takes a lot of balancing to make sure that I'm still meeting other people's expectations of me. It's easy to get up and just be in our own world. So my husband and I can run together on certain days. I schedule that when we can do that together. My social life, a lot of my friends I'm able to ride with. So that's helpful. And then, you know, with my coaching standpoint, I have athletes that I train with. So that's a win-win right there. I can, you know, I can knock out both of those things. But it's, you know, I'm often working at 8, 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night, if I'm not in bed by 9, because I might want to have worked out for a couple hours during the day. Mm-hmm. So I think it's being willing to be flexible at all levels to meet all those expectations.
What are you working on right now? What is something you trying to improve that you're struggling with that you just really focusing on?
The biggest thing I'm struggling right now with this sport is the probably nutrition / hydration piece in the heat. And it's just, I've learned a lot about my body and the amount of sodium and sweat that I lose. And it's the one thing that's keeping me from achieving my goals in Hawaii. So, I'm on a project to find a way. I feel like I'm beating my head against the wall to go back every year to this place and have some sort of nutritional hydration, you know, event. And it's pretty catastrophic every year. Mm. So I know it's the heat and I know it's my body and all the things I've thrown at it are not working. So I need somebody with a lot better education in science, to help me with this. And so that's my current project.
What are you most proud of?
I think I'm most proud of the times in a race that things really go sideways. And like even this year in Hawaii that I was probably one of my most proud finishes because it was, I didn't think I was going to finish. And somehow you go to the darkest place ever. Sometimes it's laying on the road and then picking yourself up and getting that race done. And I take a lot of pride in that. Because God, it's so easy to quit. It really is. So I think, you know, being able to, you know, to gut it out and make it happen.
Absolutely. As far as if you could go back to the start of your triathlon journey now, we've got a lot of athletes who are just getting going in the sport and finding their way. If you could, knowing what you know now, if you could go back and talk to yourself 10, 11 years ago, what would you tell yourself? Is there anything you would do differently? Anything you would do to fast track your sort of progression?
You know, I think it's, I would, I mean, I think probably one of the biggest pieces of the sport is, again, finding the right coach for you, finding a coach that truly understands your, not only your abilities, but your life. Your coach has got to understand what your life challenges are and have a realistic conversation of base. There's so much testing out there. It's not hard to know if somebody is within the parameters and being able to qualify. So I would, you know, try to get an assessment of that pretty quickly. And don't just hire a coach because they say, yeah, I'll get you to Kona. Mm. Get a power meter on your bike and learn it. Own it and learn it and forget miles per hour, forget everything else. That's a big thing. That was a game changer for me, in learning how to really, really race well. And then the other thing too is identifying your weakness and really owning it. I'm a weak runner and took me a long time to realize that that was the piece that I had to bring up in order to make my dreams happen.
Julie, it's interesting you talk about sort of the parameters and if you are able to qualify. Do you think for most people, qualification is a reality? Is it a case of you, if you've got a little bit of ability, if you're willing to do the hard yards and put in the work and maybe if things go your way, you can qualify? What's the percentage balance? Do you think, is it a case of 50% ability, 50% hard work? Is it that easy to put numbers on it?
No, it's not. I think it's, you know, if you have someone who's sort of a middle of the packer and they are doing, you can take a look at their training and assess how things are. I think a lot of people, you know, go through the motions, think they're doing all the right training. And then I think it's easy, not easy. I think you can assess if someone's got what it takes, if they're in the wheelhouse. You know, if they've done 5 Ironmans at 16 hours, unless you're 70 years old, it's a long shot. But you know, they don't have to be hitting, you know, 6th and 7th out of the gate in order to qualify. But you look for a couple of races, and then you look for, you know, where's the room for improvement. And I think a lot of people, you know, are they really willing to take that next step? And then the fourth piece of it really is luck. Who shows up to the race? You could show up to the race and the Ironman world champion is racing with you and there's one slot. You can go to Ironman Argentina and, you know, you have nobody there. So there's another piece in that of trying to strategically, you know, if you're looking at, you know, I'm not a shoe-in to qualify, don't go do Ironman Arizona. It's a fast competitive race every single year. You know, you start to look for some of the other races that historically you could get lucky, you know, in. And that's, you know, you never know. Then you could show up and, you know, who knows who will be there. But I think that's the other piece of not only picking the right race from a competitive level, but the right race from what suits you. Mm. You know, are you a climber? Then let's get you to Canada. You know, if you're, but you need to understand your strengths, and race in a course that's going to lend to your strengths. And then it depends kind of who shows up.
How many of these?
And then it's having patience.
Yeah, patience is a big one. How many of these things do you think you still got in you?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I've done 15. I don't know if I have 15 more, but I think I've got at least another 5 or 6.
Are you going to be one of those people who 60s, 70s, 80s, you're still going to be racing on the Big Island?
No, I really don't think so. I really don't. I think I'll race through my 50s. I don't know if I'll race through all of my 50s, but I've got another couple of years. And even if I didn't race for a couple of years, I'd probably come back when I aged like to 55. But yeah, I'm not sure how many years, but I'm not counting down yet.
Okay, brilliant. Well, you know what it's like in endurance sport. There are times where you say never again, and never's a long way away, so never say never.
Right, you never say never.
Julie, it's been great catching up. Thanks for your time today on the Kona Edge. I look forward to talking about your individual disciplines, but we'll save that for next time.
Hey, thank you so much.
And that's it for another edition of the Kona Edge. Thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed Julie's story. I'm back again tomorrow, where we'll be chatting some swimming here on the podcast with a returning guest, Richard Lawrie, joining us once again tomorrow's podcast. So make sure you join us then again. If you haven't hit the subscribe button yet, please do. It's a way for you to make sure you don't miss any of the upcoming episodes of the Kona Edge. And it also just helps iTunes and platforms like Stitcher and Overcast let us know, or let them know, that this podcast is worth listening to. So the more subscribers we have, the higher they bump us in their ratings. So if you haven't hit the subscribe button yet, please do. And a massive thank you to the sponsor of this episode of the Kona Edge. It was brought to you by S Fuels Ultra Endurance Drink Mix in coconut lime, strawberry lemonade, and pomegranate acai flavors. It hydrates, fuels, and supports the gut and muscles in ultra endurance training and racing. If you want to try out S Fuels Ultra Endurance Drink Mix, all you need to do is head over to this URL. It is thekonaedge.com/S Fuels, or simply text the word S Fuels to 44222, or click in the link below this episode of the Kona Edge. Until tomorrow, from myself, Brad Brown, it's cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.